Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Our time is now with LSU basketball.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
One way or another, we're going to make history.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
I came here to win. We're going to win immediately.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Case Kieschnick and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio. Jeff Palermo with you, news and sports director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo, Case Kieschnick, our producer once again tonight. Big show for you coming up. Headlined by LSU baseball coach Jay Johnson, who's been very busy in the portal. We'll find out what he thinks about the additions that the Tigers have been able to make. Are we looking at any more additions? We'll talk to Gary Smith, who writes for NOLA.com. He covers the Tulane Green Wave. One of those baseball transfer additions is Jason Wax, and so we'll talk with Gary about him. We'll also talk with Ronnie Rance, ESPN College Baseball or SEC Plus college baseball analyst, and of course, former LSU Tiger. Will get his thoughts on the additions as well. Also look ahead to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremonies that will take place not this weekend, but the following weekend in Natchitoches. And William Most, he's an attorney. He will be joining us to talk about the lawsuit that has been filed involving the Economic Development District. If you're wondering what the heck that is the district that's been set up to help raise funding for a proposed new LSU arena. So a lot to get to here over the next couple of hours. LSU football has been busy recruiting. Congress is debating college athletics. We got a lot of topics to hit on.
So who's going to draft Brendan Sorsborg?
Las Vegas. Okay. That would be the perfect pick for Brendan Sorsborg. Well, that was some good news and refreshing news just to get him out of the news cycle and get him out of college football. He's going to be in the supplemental draft. When is the date of the supplemental draft?
Obviously got to be before the training camp start, which is late July.
You never hear much about the supplemental draft.
Nobody hardly ever goes in it anymore.
Dave Wilson, I remember, back in 1980, was the Saints quarterback drafted, and he ended up being pretty good. But as far as I know, he did not gamble, though.
Yeah, but I think he's going to get selected, and I think what you are seeing from Kayshon Booty, I think, helps his case, because Kayshon has
performed
and has gotten past his gambling addiction.
I said reformed.
No, you said performed.
I meant reformed.
Okay, he's also performed as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He had a gambling accusation, not nearly as much, though.
It was pretty substantial.
It was close.
Didn't garner near the headlines.
No,
so.
No, he was out of college football.
And
he just didn't receive $4 or $5 million in NIL money to place at Texas Tech.
Yeah, that was an interesting part of that story too. That Texas Tech's not even arguing getting back the money they already paid him.
Well, you don't think they paid him up front that money, do you?
I would think probably not. But I bet you he. Well, you know, who knows? It could have been worked out over, you know, monthly payments. Maybe he got a bonus.
Yeah.
Who knows? That would be interesting to know.
Well, yeah, we'll never know.
Never know. College World Series ongoing in Omaha, of course, without the LSU Tigers. The Troy Trojans, they were eliminated. Their great story came to an end. A 12-0 loss to West Virginia. So now it'll be North Carolina and West Virginia on one side of the bracket. All North Carolina needs to do is win once, and they advance to the College World Series Championship Series. On the other side of the bracket, Georgia and Texas battling it out tonight in an elimination game. Who would have thought? The two highest seeds left Ended up having to play in the opening game where Georgia won 7-1. Can the Bulldogs do it again?
I don't think so. I think Texas is going to take it tonight, and then I think Texas is going to drum Oklahoma because I don't think Oklahoma is for real.
Yeah, Oklahoma lost the opener of the series at LSU 7-2, and then they won 4-3 and 4-2. They didn't look like a great team.
And they didn't look good in the SEC tournament either when LSU beat them.
That happens, though. You know, you see that happen. You see 500 teams do well.
They're hitting a bunch of home runs. It's amazing how they've just caught fire. They've always could pitch. I mean, that was a big part of their team, but now the offense has come around.
Well, and also they've, talking about pitching, they've, you know, their leading pitcher during the regular season is now a reliever, and a freshman, his brother, is their number one starter right now.
It'd be cool to see a Texas-Oklahoma championship series, the Great Red River Shootout.
I understand that the secret to what Oklahoma did, turning it around, was they went back to two-a-day practices. And it started eating fried chicken in between both practices. Something Skip Johnson, I think that's the manager's name.
Yes, that
coach's
is the
name.
Yep.
He did when he was in coaching junior college. So it sort of reinvigorated the Sooners.
Whereas Jay went to four-hour practices with no food or water. No, just kidding.
Drinking out of a water hose. Speaking of Jay, he's been very busy in the transfer portal. Looks like he's got all the position players that he could possibly want with Beano Waters, Cade Curlin, Dawson Park, and then Jason Wax. And then, of course, the big news that broke on Friday, Stephen Milam returning for what will be his senior season.
Yeah, I think that's great for LSU. And I do, you know, I hear some people saying, oh, I don't know if he's going to play shortstop or third base. Mean? What are you talking about?
He's the best.
He's the shortstop.
He's the best defensive shortstop in college baseball.
Yeah, put him in first. Let's put him at first base because he's getting older. You
it's
know,
like every time
Johnny Bench.
Every time I hear that, I'm like, where do you live?
Who's saying that?
I've heard several people say that.
Well, they need their LSU fan credentials removed.
Yeah, that's probably people who think everybody in the portal is just great. You think they'd learn their lesson.
But I think that the biggest acquisition that he made in the portal is the kid from Tulane, Jason Wax, because of his last name, Wax, and he's a hitter. He whacks the ball quite a bit.
Beano Waters is pretty good, too, man.
I know, but I think, you know, Waters, Wax, I'd go with Wax for a baseball name.
Well, I do look forward to hearing from Jay Johnson later on in the show because one of the things I want to ask is, you know, he obviously felt good about the transfer portal additions that he made last offseason. What's maybe different about these guys?
Big schools. Bigger schools.
I mean, that's a big part of it. I think also it's just not guys that are strictly power dudes.
Yeah, these guys can run. They're more athletic, versatile. You know, Dawson Park has played second, short, and he's probably going to start playing third.
Right. And defensively, maybe better. Now, I know everybody's going gaga over one defensive play that you saw from Dawson Park, but he still committed double-digit errors, so let's just slow
He's got break. Range, though.
He's got range, obviously, and that one highlight that everybody thinks is...
And I can't wait to ask Jay, because I know he was looking for tougher players, too, find out what tougher means.
Well,
exactly.
He got one from Texas State.
Yeah, Park fits that category.
Well,
right?
He was never came back after an altercation with a teammate following a loss in early May. So we'll see. Yeah, looking forward to that. And then the big question is, are they going to add any more pitching? Landon Hood is the one guy so far. I mean, is there anybody else out there? Is there another Anthony Ions in there? Is there a Gage Jump, a Luke Holman, somebody that you feel good about as a potential weekend starter, or do you just... And I listened and I watched his interview with Michael Cobble, which was really good, on WBRZ TV sports director in Baton Rouge, and Jay seemed pretty excited about the guys that are coming back, and despite all their struggles that they had, he feels like they have an idea on how to get them right and get them to be much better than what they were in 2026.
I look for two more left-handers.
I think he definitely needs a guy who can contend to be in the weekend rotation.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's kind of late. You know, you kind of think maybe the best ones were taken, but maybe he's got something in his back pocket. But I really like the second baseman, Cade Curlin from Florida. He made one error all season.
Yeah, he was limited last season with the oblique injury, missed some time. He put up huge numbers his freshman season offensively, and he's been good offensively since then, but has not been great like he was his freshman year. So interested to hear Jay's perspective on that as well. But it's a veteran. What I love about it is those your shortstop and second baseman. I mean, they're both. They got to be at least 22 years old, I would think, sometime next season as seniors.
And what do they have, like a combined 1,500 plays or something like that?
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, that's where you want to be strong. You want to be strong up the middle. And I don't know if Wax is your center fielder or if they're thinking someone else.
It's Wax.
Wax, if they think Wax is the center fielder or if it's going to be William Patrick.
William Patrick is probably this. He's going to be given a chance at center field. Wax has played right field most of the time, and Bino has played left field most of the time. But, I'm sure Wax could move to center if they needed him to.
Yeah, certainly could. So
let's ask Jay.
Well, we'll get a chance. And then don't forget, you got a group of now you don't know who's going to make it through the MLB draft, and then you got all these freshmen too that are going to compete.
Right.
So they got some good freshmen. Let's not forget about that. Yeah. I mean, Mason Braun for one, and Omar Serna, catcher.
Well, and Jay has a new strategy for how he's dealing with the draft, Major League Baseball draft. Talk to him about that a little bit.
Yeah. Too. All right. So a lot to get to with Jay Johnson later on in the hour. Speaking of recruiting and all that, LSU football, they're picking up the slack there to get a couple commitments from two offensive linemen, and then added a four-star running back today in Trey Segura, a 210-pound back out of South Carolina, ranked as the number seven tailback in the class of 2027. So
it's going to be a loaded running back room in 2027, man.
The kid from Franklin Parish, I guess, is out.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, if they got two running backs, are they going to really get three running backs in that same class?
That's what I'm saying. What are they going to do?
Yeah.
They're looking like they're going to have 9 or 10 people in the running back room.
They already have a pretty...
I tell you what that does say, though. That does say they're not too happy with their current running back room.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know how many of those guys are coming back.
Right, that's true.
You know, I mean, that's hard to...
Well, I mean, Harlan Berry and Caden Durham are going to be here next season.
No, we're talking about the next year.
Okay,
Look.
But that's what Lane's doing a good job of, I think. He's not just... He's recruiting for years down the road.
Well, these are for years down the road. Yeah. This is 2027.
Well, I know, but he's got some... some of these, I think he can get another back.
Well, Trey Martin is the guy that I was talking about out of Franklin Parish.
Right.
That,
I heard he was still in.
Trey, I think, issued his final four or whatever he did a couple weeks ago, and LSU was part of that, but that was before they got this commitment from Trey Segura. And you said that. What, the recruiting class is now up into the 30s?
Yeah, it's number 30, and on Sunday it was in the 50s.
Ew, yeah.
The two offensive tackles on Monday, and then the running back today has brought them up to 30, and they got 11 commitments. A lot of that was just the sheer number, because he's got some highly ranked players, but they're up to 11 commitments now. So, he's on his way, and people need to know that he's going to be – more focused or as focused on high school recruiting as the portal, and more high school recruiting focused at LSU than he ever was at Ole Miss.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I don't think he wants to go on the spending spree that he had to do this year just to put out a very competitive roster. So, all right, we're coming up on our first break here on Tiger Rag Radio. So, yeah, Jay Johnson a little bit later on. Gary Smith from NOLA.com, who covered Jason Wax at Tulane. Ronnie Rantz will join us. Of course, everyone knows who Ronnie is, former LSU Tiger, now a college baseball analyst. And then William Most set to join us later on in this hour in a couple segments anyways. And you can always catch Tiger Rag Radio anywhere where you get your favorite podcast. We're also up on YouTube. So a lot to get to. Look forward to what should be a fantastic 2 hours here on Tiger Rag Radio, and more coming up from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo, along with Todd Horn and Glenn Gilbo. Thank you very much for listening to Tiger Rag Radio. And we hit on it right off at the top. Brendan Sorsby will not be playing college football in 2026. How big of a win was this for college athletics?
I think it was huge because, you know, as we discussed several weeks on this show while the entire thing was going on, that was clearly more than an ethical violation. It was a moral failure, and it was honestly beyond that. It was illegal. Yeah. Illegal in a lot of states, a lot of jurisdictions. And forget about the fact that it totally, you know, demasculated the NCAA, which is becoming a common occurrence, and especially in local and state court systems right now. But it totally invalidated any power structure having to do with the belief in college sports and what should be done. And I think the Big 12 standing up to Texas Tech and forcing the issue is a proud moment for the sport of college football.
My question is, I wonder if he'd have been at LSU, how the LSU fans would have reacted, and LSU's lawyers and officials. You think they'd have reacted the same way Texas Tech did?
You know,
like, hey, he didn't commit murder. That's the new defense of all time. Hey, he didn't commit murder.
You know what I heard? I heard, and I didn't know this, unfortunately, but I think we talked last week. I said that LSU had offered him $3.5 million, and then Texas Tech outbid him, and he was always, it was almost a foregone conclusion, he was going to Texas Tech. According to something I heard today on radio, and Matt Moscona's show, it was $5 million that LSU offered Sorsby.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, Wilson Alexander was probably as close to LSU football as anyone when he was here.
He was certainly close to Kelly, and, Brian Kelly.
Well, yeah, and
Brian Kelly didn't have anything to do with it.
No, he didn't, but you interrupted. I think he was as close as anyone to what was going on with LSU after Kelly as well, and he said that they really weren't into Sorsby. You know, he did come visit. But he said just because he was the first one here doesn't necessarily mean that he was their top priority. You know, he kind of downplayed that.
I don't know, because Wilson, before he was on a sabbatical because of some personal issues that he was going through. So I don't know how in touch he was during that time frame specifically.
But I don't think he would speak out of turn if he didn't know what was going on.
I'm not accusing him of that. I'm just saying I don't believe that he was as in touch with it as he normally was at that time.
I'm just going by what he said on our show, and I would go with that over a lot of people. He said that he wasn't that big of a target,
he was the first visit too.
Yeah,
the first visit
doesn't mean
right,
necessarily.
No, it was
mean,
just on his way from.
He was on his way to Texas Tech,
from Cincinnati, from LSU to Texas Tech.
But if Yahoo, yeah, if
exactly.
Yahoo,
geographically, if, that's accurate.
According to Moscona, Yahoo reported it. That it was $5 million offer and had proof of it. So I mean, come on.
Well, I think Lane, either way, he definitely dodged a bullet because, you know, if he would have been interested in LSU, chances are he would have come to LSU.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't like the casinos here.
Yeah, all right. Okay. All right. So he's going into the supplemental draft, and I was looking for it. I was trying to find out what it exactly is. But they do it a little bit differently as far as the draft order. It's not the same as it is for the spring. Teams with six or fewer wins are in your first tier. Like, they divide it into three groups. So you have teams with six or fewer wins And it's random as far as that group who picks first out of it. And then it's the remaining playoff teams and then the four or the remaining non-playoff teams and then the 14 playoff teams. So they have them in these groups, and then it's randomized within there. So if you take a guy, from what I understand, like if they just wait until the third round, for instance, if a team selects them there, then you lose your third round pick the next season.
Okay, and so what I'm looking at is says that he's considered, Sorsby is considered a significant prospect with second round grade potential.
Yeah.
And it lists the Arizona Cardinals, the New York Jets, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as the top four choices.
The Jets would be perfect.
I think the Steelers would be, because Aaron Rodgers is in his last year.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the pick.
Right. Okay.
And they're used to dealing with a quarterback with baggage, like Aaron Rodgers, so Sorsby has baggage.
Now, the last player selected in a supplemental draft, you got to go all the way back to 2019. Jalen Thompson went to the Cardinals, a safety, in the fifth round. Other notable players that have been selected in the supplemental draft, Josh Gordon, who had his myriad of problems, Terrell Pryor, and that was he was ineligible, right? I believe he got all caught up in... You know, at that time, what was that? Free tattoos? Like, that was like the...
Right.
That's like child's play compared to what we're dealing with today.
But here is an important point, is the NFL still must formally approve Sorsby's application before the draft proceeds.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Let's take another break. When we come back, William Most, New Orleans-based attorney, he is representing Daryl Glasper, who's got a lawsuit over this economic development district that was formed to raise funding for the new LSU arena. So we'll get to William when we come back. So stay tuned for that. This is Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio with Jeff Palermo, Todd Horn, and Glenn Gilbo. We bring in our first guest of the night. It is New Orleans-based attorney William Most, as he's here to talk about some litigation involving the LSU arena and the funding for it. And William, thanks a lot for being a part of Tiger Rag Radio. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on the show.
William, it's Todd. How you doing?
Good, Todd. Thank you.
How's the weather? Are you staying dry? Is it getting wet yet?
Well, we're keeping an eye on the radar and the weather, because not sure what this week is going to hold.
Yeah, it from what I just heard on the breaking reports inside, it's going to be really wet throughout most of South Central Louisiana. So stay dry. But let's jump right into this arena discussion. And in fact, it's really not an arena discussion, but LSU does say they need a new arena, and the controversy is really over whether an economic development district tax structure that funds at least part of it without enough voter consent, public transparency, or accountability. That's the real issue, and I guess that's where you enter the equation. Daryl Glasper here in Baton Rouge filed a lawsuit on December 17th. And you're at the heart of that because you're the attorney representing. Can you give us an update on what the lawsuit is about, why it's been filed, and where it stands right now?
Sure. So this is a lawsuit that's about a principle that's as old as the United States, which is no taxation without representation. Because what we found out that led to this lawsuit is that there is a push to raise taxes on Baton Rouge businesses and therefore on Baton Rouge citizens without any voter approval. So as background, as the three of you probably know, most of the time when a government wants to raise sales taxes in Louisiana, it has to put it before the voters. And you've probably voted up or down on sales tax increases. And Baton Rouge residents sometimes are wary of new taxes. They want to make sure that the tax money, if it's being taken from them, is taken with their consent and used for a good purpose. But some people in power see the voters as a problem, not as a necessary and appropriate check on government overreach. And so a economic development district was set up, controlled by the president of LSU, that could raise taxes on businesses and hotels in Baton Rouge, and they set it up specifically to avoid any voter approval whatsoever.
Now, I'm going to ask you to go into depth a little bit in more detail and explain exactly what an economic development district is for those listeners who may not understand. But before I do that, I want to address what you just said. The petition you filed says that the public was told there was no determined use for the tax money. But there's private communications that were, I guess, exculpated during discovery that allegedly said the arena project gets both cents of the new taxes. Why is that allegation so important? And what should the public, I guess, you know, take from that or extract from that? What does that mean?
Yeah. So the background here is that an economic development district is a government body set up by the state legislature in this case that has the power to raise taxes. And this body, the LSU Economic Development District, it's planning to take, according to one estimate, $161 million over 30 years in sales and hotel taxes. And it's important for certain purposes, legal requirements, for there to be a clear purpose for those funds. That's a requirement of the Constitution. And if those taxes are being raised for certain infrastructure projects, there has to be voter approval. And so perhaps for that reason, they have been saying publicly that there's no plan for this money, this sales tax, what they're going to use it for. I'll give you an example. One of the board members said at a public meeting that, quote, there is no use been determined right now. That will happen at a future date. But once we got the private emails, we saw a completely different story. One of the lawyers involved wrote that the money would actually be going to the arena. He said, quote, the project gets both cents of new taxes. That has been the deal from day one. And in that same email, he said, please don't share this with anyone. We cannot expose this to a public records request. So they knew it was supposed to be secret. They knew that they were trying to hide it from the public. But the public has a right to know and decide how their tax money is being used.
Now, when the arena was first discussed as a public-private situation, it was a $400 to $500 million arena that LSU was going to have built using a private developer, which turned out to be the Oakview Valley Group or something to that, Oakview Group. There's a little bit of baggage with the Oakview Group that developed over the last year. But when Wade Roos spoke at the Baton Rouge Press Club a couple of weeks after you did in May, he said that the arena was never going to be a no-cost arena to LSU, or it was not a no-cost arena. Was that news to you?
So it's hard to say. I mean, this lawsuit is not about stopping the arena. If this lawsuit is successful, it won't stop the arena project necessarily. The point of the lawsuit is that, look, if you're going to build an arena, that's fine. And if you're going to do it with taxpayer money, you need to get taxpayer consent for that. What you can't do is raise taxes without voter approval and secretly funnel it to an arena project without the public knowing about it. So if they can do it properly, more power to them, but they're not doing it legally or constitutionally as it's currently framed.
Now, when we spoke last a couple of weeks ago, LSU had just finally responded to the lawsuit after several normal type of delays that are, I understand, routine. But they did respond. Have you had any opportunity to review their response and formulate anything about their response?
Yeah, they did respond to the lawsuit after about 6 months of delay, which is not terribly unusual. And it's a fairly boilerplate response. So now the case moves forward. We have started discovery. The case is moving forward. And Mr. Glasper is optimistic that that we will show the court that these taxes are illegal, unconstitutional, and can't be charged from the taxpayers without their thumbs up.
Now, it's going to be held in the 19th District Court here in Baton Rouge, correct?
Correct.
Do you, if you were to win the lawsuit outright, what would you expect the result of that win to be?
Yeah. So what the result of the lawsuit would be is a declaration by a court that the imposition of taxes without voter approval are unlawful and to stop them from continuing. So we are looking to, Mr. Glasper is looking to vindicate that basic American principle of no taxation without representation. And we're hopeful that we'll see it succeed. And, you know, this is really important statewide, because if one government entity gets away with raising taxes without voter approval, I think it's pretty plausible that you'll see that spread across the state. That's what I've seen with practices in the past. And economic development districts are not limited to Baton Rouge. They're all over the place. And so it's important to hold the line and say, no, these are important protections that Louisiana law has put in place. Not to say you can't raise taxes, but if you do, you have to get the necessary input from the voters, and you can't secretly funnel it to a project without their knowledge.
Now, what would the, my understanding from President Roos when he was at the press club in May speaking, he said the taxes were in fact being collected and they had moved into an account, which, as you said earlier, he was in control of. What would happen to the taxes that have already been collected in the event that Mr. Glasper and yourself were successful and won the lawsuit?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm hopeful that they would do the right thing and return it to the people they collected the taxes from, but I'm not sure if that's necessarily the remedy. We'd have to see how it goes if we get that far.
Were you surprised that President Roos also said during that press club luncheon, and I assume you're aware of it, you may not be, but that the $161 million figure that you reported conservatively that would be collected over that tax period of 30 years or through 31, whatever it was, he said could be actually over $1 billion.
Over $1 billion?
Yes.
Well, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money out of people's pockets. And if you're going to raise that kind of money, then boy, you should make sure you're doing it right. I mean, you know, projections 30 years into the future are always uncertain, right? Trying to predict what Baton Rouge business is going to be like several decades in the future is tough. So I honestly can't say whether it's going to be $161 million or a billion. All I know is it's a lot of money. And when you're raising anything in that order of magnitude, you better make sure that you're doing it in a constitutional and legal way.
One last question for you, William, and I appreciate your time. And I think it's been really valuable for listeners to hear this firsthand and hear it from you especially. But are you familiar with there's a Metro Council district that was set up that's actually going to vote on the CEA for that district? It's called the BF Bayou Fountain Economic District Development District. It's set up by the Metro Council of Baton Rouge, and it basically runs adjacent to the LSU Arena, our economic district that we're talking about, and there's a dispute over the land ownership as part of that. Are you familiar with that at all? Can you comment on that at all, if you are familiar with it?
Yeah, so I've heard about that economic development district. I haven't sat down and analyzed whether it's legal or not. I do know that there's dozens of economic development districts in the Baton Rouge area. And so this is not a one-off issue. This is a potentially recurring problem. And, you know, I think it's worth people making sure that if there's going to be these economic development districts, that they are done correctly. And that one in particular, I'd have to take a look at the specifics to see if it's legal.
William, just again, what's the next step here? When can we expect to see some movement here?
Yeah, great question. That's always a good question about lawsuits. I mean, the case is moving. Discovery has gone out. The case is moving forward. So there was a pause earlier this year while the Attorney General's office responded. But we're moving now, and I'm hopeful that we'll get a good outcome here because these are important issues, and we expect a fair shake from the courts.
William, thanks a lot for your time, man. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, William Most, New Orleans attorney. We'll take a break. More of Tiger Brag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio when we come back. The East Baton Rouge Parish Library's dedicated millage continuation is on the June 27th ballot. This is not a new tax. It's a continuation of the library's existing dedicated funding source at a lower rate, 9.5 mils, which is 14.4% less than the rate approved by voters in 1995, 2005, and 2015. Without it, future library services could be reduced, including hours, collections, and programs. Early voting begins June 12th. Learn more at ebrpl.com/millage.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio. As we do this show, former Auburn and Ole Miss head football coach Tommy Tuberville, now, of course, U.S. Senator for Alabama, is debating his bill on the Senate floor. It is the Student Athlete Act, and it's a little bit more simpler than... Not all the stuff that the Ted Cruz, Maria Cantwell bill has in it. It doesn't have anything about media rights. His is more 5 years of eligibility, five for five, and you get one free transfer. And then after that, if you want to transfer, it's like the old days. You have to sit out a year. Now, the NCAA is considering this five for five rule as well. I feel like, Glenn, they're waiting because the Protect Sports Act... Protect College Sports Act is up for markup in a Senate committee on Thursday. So that's a major step in the process of that legislation. And I kind of feel like, and maybe the NCAA is waiting to see what happens with that legislation before they move forward.
Possibly. And yeah, so you don't know when it's going to be enacted.
Yeah.
And separate of the 5-on-5, last May, the NCAA sent out some verbiage on new eligibility requirement guidance that could significantly impact top international talent headed to college basketball. It was distributed by the NCAA to member schools in May, and it said how aggressively those requirements will be enforced remains to be seen, but they could lay the groundwork for the NCAA to push back significantly on professional players in Europe and other top international leagues enrolling in college. So that sounds, from reading that, and that's from Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News, it sounds like that wouldn't affect Wade's current players right. He's trying to get from Europe, but it could down the road.
Well, even Will Wade said when he, I think it was on the John Rothstein podcast, he said, you know, we're looking at the international market because this probably is the last year that those guys will be eligible to play here.
Right, and he did hire Rick Stansbury with the idea because of his European overseas recruiting talent, but also he has gone for more players over there, I believe, because he missed on a lot of guys he wanted early on from the United States in the traditional portal.
Well, the good news is you can play with four people.
He's going to have more.
You prefer to have five.
Well, McMahon's played with four people a few times, didn't he? It seemed like it. No, I'm just kidding.
The Protect College Sports Act, by the way, it still has the portion of that legislation or inside the bill is still the part that the SEC and the Big Ten hate, and that is the pulling of media rights. So they have not taken that part of the legislation out of the bill, despite negotiations with the SEC and Big Ten on it.
So, yeah, well, tough, you know, and that's part of it. When you bring Cruz and you bring Congress in, you don't just get to ask what you want, because obviously you couldn't get it done, Mr. Sankey and Mr. Petito, and you ask for help, so you can't cherry pick and say, oh, no.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing, too, is that Cruz came out and said Friday of last week, I believe it was, that,
You know, I don't need the Big Ten and the SEC
right.
to support
exactly.
this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't need it.
Yeah.
We're gonna pass it without them now.
It's too late.
Yeah. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what they eventually pass. When we come back, we're going to hear from Ronnie Rantz, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Of course, he's heavily involved in that. The Hall of Fame induction ceremonies are coming up in a couple of weeks. You got Sylvia Fowles going in. You got John Brady going in. Warren Morris is an ambassador. I'm missing one other guy, one other LSU person. Can't think of it right
now. Joe Horn, the Saints wide receiver, not an LSU person,
no,
but he's going in. McClure, Todd McClure.
Todd McClure.
The great center.
Yes.
Football is going in.
Yeah, so, Joe Horn's my cousin.
All right. No, he's not. But we'll be back after this here on Tiger Radio.
And other things.